Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. On the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name. The echo is haunting. The echo is always the same. I call your name. The echo is haunting. An echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and you're, for those that are watching, you're looking at Tom and Melissa Gould from a different location than we normally see them. We're in a different location. We're all displaced, I guess, except for you.
Except for me.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. This is our show where we answer your questions. Some of you have emailed questions, but feel free to call in. The number here is 888-627-6008. We'd love to hear from you if you want to hear something. Getting sign language from Tom, and I picked that up right away. Before we get started, I'd like to mention that our, I think we have six spots left for our April grief retreat, which is parents only, and also the retreat in the summer retreat in Connecticut is open for registration. So you could find both of those on our website on the event page. And let's see what we have going on here. We have Teresa said that I got news from my son, Ian's father, last July, saying my son was in the hospital. Little did I know that my son was on life support at the time. I flew from Italy to the U.S. the morning after I received the message. While flying to the U.S., I clearly heard my son's voice tell me, "I'm free, Mom." Mm-hmm. Ian's life support was removed several days later, and he was able to breathe on his own for several hours. My question is, can a soul have left the body and be free, yet still be alive physically, whether the person is on life support or breathing or on their own? I hope this question, you know, was clear and makes sense. Yeah, it makes absolutely sense and absolute sense. And we believe that, yes, indeed, you can have the physical body still hanging on, but the soul is off
it's moved on
elsewhere. Yeah, moved on.
And
we hear that, but that's kind of extraordinary that you heard the voice, free, Mom, right? Because Ian was able to get that message to you quickly, you know, even while his body was still there, but he was already on the other side, you know, so that's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard that a lot. In the sense that, of course, a lot of people, when their loved one perishes in some sort of accident or something like that, their major concern is, oh my gosh, did they have pain? Did they suffer from that? And of all the readings I've seen, a lot of times, I mean, if it's say a car accident, they'll tell the medium that they were already gone when the car hit, that they didn't feel any pain. As soon as it was their time, off they went. That's one thing. Another thing was when my dad was had been taken off of life support after a massive stroke, he was still alive, but they were transporting his body from a hospital in New York City to a hospice in Port Jefferson. And the ambulance had to drive past our house, not literally past our house, but, you know, our house was in between the two places.
The exit to our house.
And we were having dinner with some friends. And right about the time when his ambulance would have been going past our exit, my car alarm started going off. And it had never gone off on its own before, and it hasn't since. And it was there was nobody around, and we all figured, well, there that's Dad saying hello as he was going by. But he was still alive, and he lived for a good 5 or 6 days afterwards. So yes, I've seen firsthand that they can leave their body when it's getting close to time.
And if you recall, when your mom, we wanted to keep her at home, but the last 48 hours, it seemed like the care we could give her at home wouldn't be sufficient. And so she was transferred to a beautiful hospice setting. And as we were waiting for the hospice transporters to arrive, mom was laying there and we were talking to her. And suddenly there was like this, we were talking to her. She was not responding. But then there was right before they arrived, or as they started to lift her
When
and move
we
her.
yeah the there was one guy who came, and so he needed help to get her from her bed onto the gurney, and I helped. And as soon as we lifted her, she gave out a little moan, and I could feel
Like a whoosh.
whoosh right through me, and I knew that was her. And then on top of all of that, we've heard of remote viewing, where people can leave their body and go off to a coordinate somewhere and see what's there. So there are living people who can leave their body. So people close to death can also.
Yeah, you wonder, we've all heard of people that are in comas for extended time, and sometimes months, and even there are cases of people who are in a coma for years, and it's clear that they're just keeping the body alive. There's no possible way of them recovering. And yet, it makes you wonder, the soul is already gone and they're already living life in a different dimension. Why it seems so silly to keep the body alive, right? So that happens. There's a question. I had a medium reading recently, and at the end of the reading, the medium took a moment to close the reading. She thanked spirit and conveyed to spirit that the reading was over. I had never seen this before and was wondering the purpose of this and what would happen if the reading did not end in that fashion. I mean, it's not often. I've only seen that once, and that was very recently. The medium finished and then requested that the sitter, hang on for a while she spoke to spirit and thank them and said, and now I'm closing, the reading. Most mediums don't do that. Most mediums say, they just, say spirit is pulling back, or they give a message and and that's it. So I don't know. I guess there's nothing wrong with it, but mediums generally don't feel like they have to say that to spirit, like we're closing the reading now. I think spirit knows, right? So,
That's interesting. Maybe it's partly to let the sitter know, all right, this is it. We're the show is done, and
I know. It was a
thank you for
little
your participation.
right. I know. And what if the spirit says, I'm not done yet.
Well, that begs that question for sure.
Although we've seen, the three of us here, and Marta too has been part of the group reading sometimes at our retreats, which we often, and if anyone's listening, we don't at our the retreats that we're the facilitators at, we never want to be read. We love our we want our loved ones to know, of course, we want to hear from you, but this weekend that we're participating in is more for our attendees. And I trust that spirit understands that, and that our loved ones in spirit understand that. But we've been able to watch some of the group sessions, and the medium will just say, no, they're pulling back now. And I loved, if you recall, Bob, one of our mediums recently she was like, as they often are, gangbusters, message after message. But she described it like, no, they're all in a line. They're all in a line waiting to come through. And I think that's how it goes. The
Yeah.
spirits want to communicate with us.
Right. We had a question. Can mediums help find missing persons? And then we had another question that just came in, and with people specifically asking if we knew if mediums have been contacted to help find Nancy Guthrie's,
Oh,
mom.
right.
I actually happen to know that there are mediums, some of our mediums that are working on that. But there's two things involved, right? Because if the person that you're searching for is already passed, then the mediums, they may be able to give the mediums specific, information about their passing or whatever. But if the person that they're searching for is still alive, it becomes more of a psychic or remote viewing type of exercise, so which not is not always the expertise of the mediums, but you never, but we all know that mediums, even a lot of the Forever Family Foundation mediums, have worked with police and continue to do so about that. So we know that it helps. And when you've exhausted everything else, why not?
Oh,
Try.
wouldn't you? I would
Oh yeah.
totally rely on that.
Yeah. I would have called in a medium, at the very beginning, So
Absolutely.
yeah.
But that's us.
Yeah, usually the resistance comes from the others. I was going to say the other side, but I meant the law enforcement. There is a pretty much general feeling amongst law enforcement that this whole stuff is hooey, and if you even suggest that you're going to be talking to a psychic or a medium, you could be laughed out of your department.
I know.
So there is that, which
Yeah.
of course society has put that on us, that we're not supposed to be dabbling in this sort of thing.
Right.
Right.
Can mediums, let's see, do people who don't believe in God get into heaven?
Oh, it's
Yeah.
been, heaven is a construct, right? For those who typically believe in God. I don't use the word God much, but something greater than ourselves. So that's interesting that I always wanted to hear from the other side, someone who was very religious. Well, really, what is going on? Were you greeted at the pearly gates? Were you surrounded by angels, or what was it like? Heard that in our readings that we've listened in on. Are people really describing how they were greeted? We know loved ones have been there to greet us, but sort of based on their religious beliefs. I
Well,
don't know.
we've heard near-death experiences where people
That's
say that
true.
they were greeted by Jesus or something like that.
Yeah.
Back to the question, it's a matter of semantics. The other side certainly has a heavenly appeal to it, and you, with the love and compassion that you're greeted with, you quite naturally would say, well, this must be heaven because it feels so good and it's so loving. So, whether you call it heaven or what, it's a better place than we're living in now.
Yeah, I think of it the same way. Heaven is a plane of existence, and there's no prerequisite that you have to believe in God to believe that our loved ones survive physical death, and that we, but the concept is the same, that we believe that you get to a heavenly like plane by exhibiting all the love and compassion and helping other people in your in your basic life. So in that sense, but we noticed this years ago when we first started that many people always associate afterlife with religion, that goes hand in hand, but it's not necessarily the case. What do you?
Well, I was thinking that if you are raised in a certain faith, and you when you pass, you might very well see someone that you are familiar with, and that would certainly be someone that you've been thinking about and being taught about throughout your life. So, you might very well meet Jesus or Moses or Muhammad, because you're that like when I was a child, when I read Jesus about the woman at the well, and I fell in love with Jesus because I thought, well, here's someone who tolerates and loves everyone. And so, so Jesus was a big part of my life for many years, and it's still there. So perhaps I would meet Jesus in
Right.
an afterlife, because he's been a part of my life, just as my mother and father and my husband and are all a part of my life. And it could very well be. Why not?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, Tom mentioned, the near-death experience, and it's true that people that are resuscitated get tasked with trying to put their experience into words, which is not easy. But the way they put it into words is based on their own frame of reference and their own cultural and religious views. So they may be seeing this beautiful entity of life. And, Marta might say, well, that's Jesus. Or somebody else might say, well, that's God. Or somebody might say, that's Muhammad. But it's all the same light, but we put different terms. And that's why people in diverse parts of the globe with different cultural and societal and religious differences report seeing religious figures that are mesh with what they were taught to believe. So, I think that's interesting. I was coming, I think we read this once before. I was looking over my notes and there was something about grief that was attributed to Jim Carrey.
Oh yeah.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, he talks a lot
Jim
about it.
Carrey once said, "Grief is not just an emotion, it's an unraveling, a space where something once lived but is now gone. It carves through you, leaving a hollow ache where love once resided. In the beginning, it feels unbearable, like a wound that will never close. But over time, the raw edges begin to mend. The pain softens, but the imprint remains, a quiet reminder of what once was. The truth is, you never really move on. You move with it. The love you had does not disappear. It transforms. It lingers in the echoes of laughter and the warmth of old memories, in the silent moments where you still reach for what is no longer there. And that's okay. Grief is not a burden to be hidden. It's not a weakness to be ashamed of. It is the deepest proof that love existed, that something beautiful once touched your life. So let yourself feel it. Let yourself mourn. Let yourself remember. There is no timeline, no right way to grieve. Some days will be heavy, some will feel lighter. Some moments will bring unexpected waves of sadness, while others will fill you with gratitude for the love you were lucky enough to experience. Honor your grief, for it is sacred. It is a testament to the depth of your heart. And in time, through the pain, you will find healing, not because you've forgotten, but because you have learned how to carry both love and loss together.
Wow.
That's wonderful, isn't it? I mean,
That's
that
brilliant, really. That's right on the money.
Did he have a specific loss that gave him this realization? Do you re recall?
I don't know anything really about it, and I really haven't verified that it was him that said it. I picked that up, from some site. So,
Yeah, I
but
definitely think it was him because he does talk a lot about, he's very spiritual, just a I remember one of my first experiences with Jim Carrey's spirituality was how he was, before he got famous, he was homeless. He was living in his car, waiting to get cast in something. And while he was living in this car, he wrote himself a check
Oh, yeah.
for $20 million. And he put it aside and basically as an intention and said, this is going to be in my future. And sure enough, he made a movie where he was paid $20 million. So I don't think everybody could necessarily do that, but it just shows how he was on the path to spirituality right from the start.
I
Yeah,
have
that's
my
great.
checkbook with me. Should I check
Yeah,
it
thank you. So we're
out?
all
First
writing
thing I'm
them
going to do is
down.
go
All
and try
right.
and find mine.
I have one.
When you do find your checkbook, Melissa,
Yeah.
make it payable to Bob Ginsburg.
Good. Oh,
Yeah,
wait,
Bob. I'll share. All right, we have Antonia from California on the line. Hi,
Great.
Antonia.
Hi, Bob. Thank you. I have a question about during a sitting, is the medium's connection a two-way connection with spirit? Can I, through that connection, communicate with my son and ask a question? I believe so.
And a lot of mediums do usually at the end of their readings ask the sitter if they would like to ask a question of the person in spirit. You don't always get an answer to a direct question, but sometimes it happens. But I think it is a two-way connection. And even if it's not through a medium, there's nothing to prevent you from asking your loved one a question and seeing if that comes through, in the form of a voice or a vision or a dream visitation and so forth. So, but it's not, a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that it's like a phone call, where
Right.
you can
Right.
ask specific questions and you get it, it's hard. It's hard for them to communicate. A lot of spirits, have to learn how to do it and maybe need assistance to do it. So it's hard enough getting those little snippets of information in the medium, then putting it into words and interpreting it. It's even harder to get a direct answer to a direct question. So I don't
I
know
was thinking that you
if
could ask the question. But your son might not, that the answer to your question might come out differently because what's important to you might have shifted in his present state. And what you might want to know, he might not feel it was, I hate to say not important, but not necessary for you to know. So I think there are probably a number of reasons, but I think it'd be worth a try.
Yeah. I mean, the reason we don't usually
Yeah.
recommend that a sitter ask the medium a question, it's sort of like feeding them information, but after the reading is over, I don't see anything wrong with it. Have you tried that, Antonia?
Well, I had a sitting with a medium. I finally felt I could do it after the autopsy report. It felt like, okay, now I can talk because I know what happened. And I found myself in that first sitting very skeptical, and I felt kind of ashamed that I was almost not really believing her. And so I've already scheduled one with Forever Family. It's in April, and I want to
Great.
be prepared for it. Yeah, I'm so excited. I want to be prepared for it because I feel if I ask my son for a sign, that I feel like I don't know how I'm not worthy to ask him. I feel like I'm putting too much pressure on him, like I'm testing him. Send me a sign. I feel like that's too much. I'm trying to figure out how to communicate directly with what
Yeah,
I'm saying.
I don't think it's too much. I think that he appreciates that and wants to communicate you and will try to make it happen. During your reading, I wouldn't necessarily, ask the medium a specific question. Just let the medium, it's more evidential when the mediums brings through the messages, from your son. Having said that, if it's unclear if the medium's bringing through information that may apply to two different people or more, I don't, there's nothing wrong with trying to ask the medium, be honest. I'm not sure who that is. Can you give me more information? And that's their signal to go back to spirit and get, more specifics. But I don't think that you should feel like you're putting any pressure on them. Your son's greatest wish is to be able to get through to you, in any way that he can.
And please, oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Antonio, please don't be discouraged if you don't get to hear directly from your son, because it's a two-way street. Tom's probably going to say that, the connection that the medium has to make with your son, and then his back with the medium. So be open to whatever comes through, and hopefully it'll be what you want to hear.
And actually, what I was going to say is never apologize for being skeptical. In fact, I think the healthiest thing to do is to be a skeptic. And the caveat being, be an open-minded skeptic, someone who don't take it at face value. Don't just assume because they're calling themselves a medium that they're going to be great. Go in there with a skepticism. And then when the medium and the spirit get together and come through with what we call the dazzle moments, where it's like, oh my God, how could they possibly know that? That's what you're looking for. And you won't get that unless you have a bit of a skepticism going into it. So that's a healthy thing.
Okay. Thank
Okay,
you.
well, thanks for calling in, Antonia. I hope you hear from your
You're
son.
welcome. So do I. You too. Thank
Okay.
you. Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye-bye. Question was, how can a medium understand thoughts from someone in spirit who spoke a different language? You have a story about that from your daughter.
Yeah, my daughter Laura was having a very, very difficult time and was in some small town and alone, and really had no one to talk to. And she was sort of in a half state of sleep, between sleep and awake, being awake. And she saw my father, her grandfather. They were sitting on a bench, and he was speaking Swedish to her. That was his first language. And she understood everything he said. And later on, when she awoke completely, she remembered what he said to her, and what he looked like, what he wore. And she felt so changed by it, and she knew that. And my father was this very deep, extraordinary person. I don't think he ever said anything angry like Melissa. Never yelled at anyone. He was always so kind and gentle and understanding, and he came to her at the exact moment that she needed him. And but that he spoke in Swedish. I mean, she knew he was speaking in another language, but that she understood him, she said, was the great gift. And
Wow.
because he came in as a younger man, and he probably would have spoken more Swedish at the time.
Yeah, because he's, and I guess the explanation is that he's not really, it's the thought that counts, it not the language, and somehow the thoughts get transmitted, so what they're saying. But we see it happen all the time with mediums will tell you that they really don't have a problem when they don't speak the language of the person that's
Right.
speaking.
I have a question for the two of you. I think this might be something both of you could answer. Anyone who's had a loss could answer, but I think I'm a little more intrigued because each of you have lost a spouse. And my sister actually was asking me how we felt about this new technology with AI, where they recreate your loved one. And you can have conversations with them and get responses. And you're getting the image of your loved one and the way they spoke. And she was curious how people take to that. That is it a comfort? Is it weird? I mean, I guess if you're seeking it out, you're hoping for comfort. What do you two think? Would that be something you would engage in?
Just for me personally, no. To me, it's cheating. It's not. It's hurtful. It's make believe. I want to hear directly from, my loved one, but not, AI generated. But I don't know. What do you think?
I think right after Kevin died, I would have done anything. And that would have, it might have very much helped my grief. And because, I mean, I was wailing at this, and angry at God and everybody. And it might have helped me just, feel comforted for a while. And eventually I would have thought, well, this is AI generated, and but perhaps it would have, would have alleviated some of my so terrible sorrow.
I can see both sides of it. What they do with AI now and what they will do in the future is, quite amazing. So if you have the image and you had, let's say, sample writings and conversations from your loved one. I mean, I see when we have a meeting, on Zoom, and then as soon as the meeting is over, sometimes I'll get a 9-page summary of everything, that went on instantly. It's quite amazing.
I know.
But
I'll see to Molly, just I'll be right back.
Bob, how would that have been, do you think, with your daughter? With the, if you had an AI conversation, same feelings?
I would
I
have.
make you more upset, right? Like, I want the real thing. I don't want
I
make
know.
believe.
It's sort of like, when people tell you, when people used to say to me, well, she will always exist in your heart. That wasn't enough for me. I don't want it to exist in my heart. I want it to exist. I want to know she exists, period, not in my heart, So I never found that helpful either. But I could see where some people, it could have deep emotions, and especially if it sounds like them and it's and they say things that your loved one might say,
Well, what jumps to mind for me is, when they do experiments with groups, and then, one group gets the medicine and the other group gets a placebo. And sometimes the people with the placebos get feeling much better. So I think this AI experiment here is a placebo. But if it works, it works.
I can't argue with that. We have a question. Have mediums ever brought through deceased entities that were never human, like extraterrestrials?
How
Not
would
that
they
I'm.
describe that? Yeah, what do you think they would say? Because obviously, no one in the room or the sitter, if it's one person, could identify them unless they've been visited by an alien, maybe.
Well, let's back up a little, because when you say, did they ever get visited by somebody who's non-human? Pets do come through. So dogs and cats will come through. So if there's an alien who wants to talk to you, the trouble is with mediumship, the idea is to produce evidence, to produce something that the spirit will show you something that only you know or only they know and could possibly know. So what's an alien going to do that would make you think, oh, it's definitely an alien? Because you have no points of reference.
That's
Right.
true. And that may be a reason why they wouldn't come through, because they're smart enough to
Yeah.
know why am I wasting my time? You know, unless it's somebody like me who I am an alien, so
That's right.
I might understand. Could have been one of my
Or if you
alien
were
relatives.
abducted, you know, and probed and all that, when and this creature comes through and says, "Oh, remember that that cold rod that the oh, that was you, huh?"
Yeah, I thought it was Tom. We have a question. Do people worry about losing their faith at the moment of death?
I feel like I've heard that. You know, they're well,
Well,
like they've believed in God your whole life. And I'm religious, so I'm probably the wrong person to ask, but I've heard that where you've believed your whole life strongly in God, but that when you know it's the end for you, the end of the physical world, you start to wonder, am I really going to meet Jesus? And is it really going to be heaven-like? I think they might, but I don't know. What do you think?
I think faith is based on a acceptance of something unknown. And at the moment of death, when you all of a sudden know, yeah, I guess you lose your faith because you don't have to have faith that it exists. You'll know what exists at that point. You have the knowing. So I'm not happy with that answer, but
Well, my father was had a deep faith, and he was a professor of philosophy, and theology was his second interest, and he wrote a poem, which I always appreciated, and that was about having exactly what you're saying, the that at the last second would his faith fall from him.
Oh.
I mean, I felt sorry for him to have had even a doubt, as even a speck of doubt, that might be the case. But again, he was a deep thinker. He knew that living a good life was a re reward in itself, and being kind to people
True.
and good to people, and that perhaps, it didn't matter what would happen, but there was something in him that made him feel that perhaps it does matter when
Oh.
you die, whether you're going to hold on to that. What you've been used to. We were talking about that earlier, about my own beliefs and whether you see the religious person in your afterlife. So I think it was maybe just a question. It wasn't a concern, but I found it to be an interesting question.
Yeah.
Yes.
I
To
also
read.
feel
Yeah.
that in my life, I have faith that our consciousness survives and that there'll be a wonderful experience when I do cross over. That's my faith. So at the point of death, I'm not going to lose my faith. I'm going to have my faith verified and actually increase my faith in that.
Yeah. I was just going to say something very similar, and that I don't think about losing faith in a religious sense. I think about losing faith that I'm going to continue on.
Yeah,
I so I spent the last 20 some odd years talking about evidence that we do, and at
exactly.
that moment, where it's should I get off the pot,
Oops.
am I gonna falter? It's like, so I don't think so, but that's the only thing that I contemplated,
Yeah.
Have to come back for a Signs of Life radio show and say, oh, sorry, guys. We got it
Well, not from the evidence that I've heard from many, many sources now.
I agree.
Here was a question. What is the actual process of dying like? Is it the same for everyone? Like, in other words, do you go to the next life immediately, or is it a process that takes some time as we know it?
You know, weren't you just commenting on something like that? And I equated it back to that book we talk about, Testimony of Light, where light or life, testimony of
Light.
light, LIGHT. And it was almost like a baby being born, and you sort of awaken into a world and start to take it in, but fall right to sleep or a sleep-like state. And over time, that repeats itself as you take in your surroundings and start to assimilate with this new world, and other entities are there. So I would guess that would be after the initial greeting of a loved one, because we've heard that so many times that someone was there to greet you, but maybe comfort you. Like a newborn baby wouldn't just be left alone entirely in an empty space, but others would be around overseeing the care. And I feel like it would be like that, overseeing you as you adjust to this new spiritual realm.
Yeah, and I interpret that question sort of in the back of my mind that they're wondering, is there a purgatory that you have to go through before you get to the great reward? And that depends on the life you live. I mean, as far as, because everybody experiences the same thing when they die. Yes, when you die, you're greeted by familiar spirits, loved ones, guides, that sort of thing. Everybody gets that. Everybody gets that. But if you've lived, and then the first thing that happens is you get the life review, and the life review is a self-judgmental. It's not like you're sitting in front of a row of judges. You're seeing it yourself, and what you're feeling is any pain that you've inflicted in your lifetime on other people, you feel their pain in your life review. And if it's a lot of pain that you need to deal with that. And as Melissa said in Testimony and Light, they talk about that some people need a lot of help with dealing with the life that they lived. And a lot of times that results in you got to go back. You didn't learn what you were supposed to learn. You didn't do what you're supposed to do. You're going back to that wonderful place we call Earth.
In the form of reincarnation.
Exactly.
And maybe not immediately. Well, time is no, there's no time. So it might be immediate in that realm.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, everything happens at once, so it's you can't even put it in terms of time.
You know, can I, Bob, after you're done commenting, I wanted to read and get your opinion about something similar. So I don't want to interrupt you at the moment.
No, I was just
No,
going
I
to
was
say
just going to say.
the process, after a soul leaves the body. I mean, a lot of experience, near-death experiences talk about you've heard, everybody has heard about about being in a tunnel like tube, and there's quite a bit of darkness. And I think at the beginning they say, well, I'm not really quite sure what's happening. And then, eventually, off in the distance, they'll see a dim light as they're hurtling at high rates of speed through this tunnel, and eventually come out on the other side where they're not only a bright light, but they're surrounded and immersed in this light that they describe as love. So I don't think the process of getting from one dimension to the next takes a lot of time as we know it. But once there, as you both alluded to, you may need help. I mean, what if you were a person, in the physical life who had a lot of addictions, or you were extremely attached to the material things, Hey, you're in the next realm, but you have help, to progress and shed those bonds, so to speak. So,
Yeah.
we'll find out.
What I wanted to share, Bob,
Yeah.
was something I recently read in a memoir, and it wasn't a memoir dealing with this topic, but the woman writing the book was talking about her family. The whole book was about her family, and her dad had passed away, and now her mother was soon to die, and her mom was in hospice. And this is what the author wrote about her mother's as she approached death. She moaned loudly when she was unconscious. The hospice staff explained that when people are dying with unresolved business, there is often an uncomfortable vocalization of their repentance, their misery, and they called it terminal anguish. I don't like that. I don't believe in that. But have you ever heard that? Terminal anguish?
No, I haven't. And look, if you've ever sat with a dying person, there's all sorts of horrible sounds that happen, and I think that's just a physical effect of the body dying. But no, I don't think that. If they're going to have all these unresolved things, they're not going to contemplate that until
The life review.
they cross,
Yeah.
so unless the soul has already left the body. So no, I never heard of that. I don't
No.
personally believe it, but
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad I brought it up.
So here's the question: do earthly passions carry over to the afterlife?
What kind of passion?
Earthly passions.
Well, earthly passions,
Could you say more
certain.
about
I don't like where your mind is going, but
that? Well, just an example. What?
I will. The terrible influences of
Terrible,
stuff.
terrible.
Well, listen, people that have a passion for music and art
There you go.
and whatever, certainly not only does it carry over, but you use those passions to help other people, right? And influence other people. So I don't know
You
where
have
else
fair
to
trade of thought.
I don't know where else to go with that, but
I would hope so, because like you mentioned, music is a universal language, and there is such beauty in so much of it, and I hope that it continues. I hope that and art and creativity. It just to me, creativity is something that is not unlike spirituality. You can't quite put your hand p finger on it, but it's there, and it's expressed by so many so beautifully. And I can't imagine that that would die. I think that it must go into another realm with you. And at least I hope.
I've read about on the in the spiritual realm that there are what are called soul groups that, as you mentioned, musicians will find themselves in a spiritual group of other musicians, scientists in a group of other scientists. So that's certainly a survival of the passion that you had carried in life.
We had another similar question, from Tim, and he said, prior to passing, many people derive pleasure from doing physical things. A dancer finds pleasure in moving his or her body. Singing, especially if one is doing it correctly, can be very physical. An athlete can get pleasure from throwing a ball or running fast. Are these pleasures to be found in the afterlife, or is everything there just mental? Well, everything there is thought, but we believe that while we're there, we can manifest those thoughts to simulate doing physical things. So yes,
Yeah.
you can play ball, in the afterlife. I mean, and it will seem as real to you or realer than when you were playing ball in the physical world, just in a different sense, So people talk about, in these channeled reports about manifesting homes and schools of learning and museums and so forth. So, but it is a realm of thought. Everything is a construct of thought, of consciousness. So there, are those buildings made of stone? No, but it appears to be when you're immersed in it. It's a hard concept to grasp, but
Yeah.
I think that's the way it is.
I know we don't have much more time, but you're making me think now. And you can correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, Tom's an incredibly talented musician and can create songs fully blown, and I'm amazed. But I think a visual thinker, and I can describe something to Tom, like just renovating our home, and I can totally envision fully blown the renovations I want to have happen, and then we make it happen with the talented people that can do that sort of thing. But Tom will tell me often, "Oh, I didn't really see how that was going to turn out until it's there." So it's a kind of a different sort of thing because he can create music out of everything that's in your head, and I can't do that, but I can, it totally envision something solid that I want to have happen, or think about a recipe that I want to make and know how I want it to turn out, so I know what to do about that. So what is that?
We're all unique
I
beings,
don't
we
know.
all have different abilities and our brains work differently. It's the same thing. You two conceptualize things in different ways. I have absolutely no sense of direction. I'm terrible at geometric reasoning, but I could do the times spelling bee in 10 minutes. Yes. My brain just works differently than other people. So I don't be down on yourself for that.
Which
Good
one of
advice.
us?
That goes for everybody.
Well,
Thank you.
we've got just about a minute left. We've got incidentally somebody last week had a last show was asking for the name of the Global Peace Prayer, and I sent them a copy of it, and the name of it is Global Peace Prayer. So, and that was, if you recall, Claude Swanson believed that, we could change our world if by everybody focusing, preferably at the same time, on one thing, like the Global Consciousness Project. So he used to post this prayer, and people used to tune in around the globe, and it said, "Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment."
And that makes me want to remind everyone that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to accept it. Thank
I
you, and
agree.
good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Wonderful to see you.
Wonderful to see you. Thank you.